Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rebook, the show where we talk about the big, meaty men and women who be slapping the meat in the middle of the ring and the stories they tell in the process, brother. I'm, of course, GB, the guy who hits the buttons and stuff. You're, of course, joined by the drama king himself, TNA's Matthew Riewoldt. And then we're joined by the Jake, the Brain, Bennett, the man himself with a freaking awesome sweater, might I add. I just watched that movie the other day.
Pretty good.
And it's the best Christmas movie.
It's still ridiculous. Well, there are good Christmas movies, though. Actually, I'm glad you guys talked about that because the holidays are right around the corner. Before we talk about holidays real quick, do want to let everyone know next week will be our last episode before the break, but it's going to be a doozy. More on that in a second. Don't worry about it. But I did want to talk about Christmas real fast because me and my wife have been going through going through as many Christmas movies as we actually could. And last night, she watched Love Actually. And I don't understand what the point of that movie is. And it really bothers me that, like, that's a movie that gets suggested to people to watch, you know, because, like, Matt, you're shaking your head. You know about Love Actually. What is the point of it?
So I've had a journey with Love Actually. I used to really like it. I thought it was it was kind of one of the first of those, like, let's follow the 8 different stories and they'll all combine in some, like, kind of, you know, like New Year's Eve ended up being in that Valentine's Day movie rom-com.
I
used to like it. I thought it was cute. I liked a lot. I still do like a lot of the actors in it. There's some fantastic,
I mean, actors freaking in it. Top line, bro. Like, who's who of British acting? Like, it's insane.
But I was literally talking to my wife about this morning. I saw this, like, Instagram post that was, like, such a good, like, takedown of, like, why do people, especially the lens of, like, 2025, of, like, things like, oh, so the prime minister moves into office and day one is lusting after the tea girl.
Yes.
Like, that's not problematic at all.
And then when she didn't want to hook up with him.
A woman who's like a size like 5.
Yeah.
And they're calling her fat the whole movie. And then
there's what's his face? Snape. Oh my God, I'm forgetting his name.
Alan Rickman.
Rest in peace. He's like cheating on his wife.
Which is part of the story. That's one thing. But then there's, like, Liam Neeson crying over his deceased wife, and his, like, sister or whatever is like, quit crying. Nobody's going to, you know, screw you if you're crying all the time, which is an awesome message. Then there's Kevin Kline, who has, once again, just like the prime minister, like a day after meeting his housekeeper, who doesn't speak the same language as him, just starts like lusting after her and then taking advantage of the fact that she does not speak the language. And then without ever having a conversation proposes at the end of the movie. And she's just
it's insanity.
I know it's cute, but there's this. And then of course, friggin' Andrew Lincoln is like trying to make his best friend's wife cheat on him, even though it's just like, I know you won't love me back, but I just want to tell you. That's messed up. If my best friend was coming to my wife and be giving her, like, some poem on Christmas Day, and cherry on top, you know how old Keira Knightley was when they filmed that movie?
No.
17.
Oh, no.
So that just adds, even though her character can be whatever, it's just kind of a funny little button on all of it. So, I used to kind of like it. My opinion has soured.
I mean, you know what? I am so glad.
Maybe it's cold outside of Christmas movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, like, it's cute. Like, I get it. If you look at it through one lens, it can be. But then you pull back a little bit and you're like, ugh.
One time, it was like a year or so, 2 years ago, I want to say, Cynthia and I were doing the tree and that song came on. And I had never really paid attention to the lyrics of the song. I just only, it's cold outside. And I'm like listening to it. And then that's when we were like, yo, this is like some Predator shit, man. Like, what?
Yeah,
what is
but
this?
Don't go anywhere. It's tongue in cheek. It's playful. Like, come on.
Yeah, you know.
No, it is. Drink more alcohol.
She obviously wants to bang him too, but this song was made in a time where that was not appropriate for women to do, but men could be poonhounds all they wanted to. I think it's an empowering song.
Oh, who wrote Love Actually? Because that will actually say a lot about... It was written by a man named Richard Curtis, who also directed the film. He wrote Notting Hill. He's a director for Notting Hill and Bridget Jones' Diary. So that makes a lot of sense. And it was written by a man, which would be the only reason why that movie is a thing. All right, so learned a lot. And above all else, and I think this is the most important thing that I think definitively and the reason why I want to have this conversation, Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Third greatest, but I agree it's a great...
Batman Returns? You think Batman Returns is a Christmas movie? I never thought about that. Is it?
Batman Returns is a retelling of a Christmas tale. I didn't know that. No, seriously, listen, and I'll tell you why. So, the Penguin is the ghost of Christmas past. He shows Bruce Wayne what he could have become as an orphan had he not taken the path that he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Catwoman is the ghost of Christmas present, showing what he could become, or what he could have chose to become when he became Batman. He could have been selfish. He could have been violent. He could have all this stuff, vengeful. Yeah. But that's not who he is. Okay. Christopher Walken's character Shrek is the ghost of Christmas future, showing what a rich and powerful man could do to the city if he had the means and motive to do so. So
I like this lens.
It is a retelling of Dickens in a way.
Flag on the play of the entire linchpin of A Christmas Carol is that Ebenezer Scrooge needs to be shown this. At the beginning of Batman Returns, Bruce Wayne's cool. He's chill. He's a good dude. He's a superhero. People like him.
Hey,
he's a benefactor millionaire. Like, he doesn't need to change.
You always need a reminder of who you're supposed to be.
Also, was Scrooge also looking to bang the Ghost of Christmas Present as well? Or was that just like...
Where does that one kind of line in?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Ghost of Christmas Present shows up, Ebenezer Scrooge, he's like, line
him up. Besides, A Muppet's Christmas Carol is the best telling of that
he's
story.
Like, tell Marley to bring back them chains.
But you know, though, I gotta say, I kind of like that reframing. That's kind of cool. Pretty dope. I never heard of that interpretation before, so that was pretty cool. Let us know favorite Christmas movie in the comments. Love to hear it from you guys, because there's a lot of great ones out there. My personal favorite, number one for me, even though I love Die Hard, Jingle All the Way. Put the cookie down will forever be a legendary line. Yeah. Cynthia says it at least once a day during Christmas time.
I'm Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, Die Hard.
Okay, Christmas Vacation, Home Alone, Die Hard. Matt,
no, my favorite. I'm Christmas Vacation. I am a It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay,
classic, just lover. And I think I felt like I mentioned this last week or whatever. Not inherently a Christmas movie, but it is for me, Casablanca.
Casablanca.
Oh, okay.
Because I started watching it when I was a young man. I watched it one Christmas, and it was like the best mood I had ever been in my entire life.
Yeah.
I was watching it by the Christmas tree, and so now I try to watch it every year.
Okay, that's cool.
Circumstance.
No, that's awesome. It become a good for me. It was Jingle All the Way, the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer claymation movie from back in the day as a kid. I love that movie. And then Die Hard, because Die Hard is truly incredible. It's still good to this day. And also, Cynthia, at the end of it, we watched, and she's like, oh my God, it ends with a Christmas song. It's totally a Christmas movie.
It started with a Christmas
song. It starts and ends with a Christmas song. It's a Christmas movie. Plain and simple. All right, so let us in the comments know why Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie. We'll love to hear from it. In any case, though, speaking of comments, we, of course, have some fun ones from folks who wanted to share some of their thoughts here, because one user, Ranma, has some suggestions on where to watch some wrestling on YouTube. This is a good one. Wanted to feature it. He said, honestly, I haven't kept up with the WWE main roster, but I've been watching the hell out of NXT and AAA. They both put full matches on YouTube, with AAA uploading their full events. Recently, Vikingo and El Gigante, or El Grande, excuse me. El Grande.
Oh my goodness.
I was going to say El Gigante. He's back. It's crazy. El Grande
He's
always around. They put on a banger that's been the wrestling highlight for me this week. Yeah, I mean, look, there's great wrestling all across all of YouTube. We talk about it. I talk about it as much as I possibly can. I have been very much enjoying TNA's offerings as well as AEW's offerings. And WWE have been putting on some. They did like I think like an AJ Styles highlight package recently. That was really cool.
The WWE Vault channel too is pretty good. And the rumor is now with the Netflix, ESPN, that they're just going to put it all on their own YouTube channel. A lot of companies are just deciding to go, and with all these rights moving back and forth, they're like, well, what content we can, we're just going to put on our own private, like, owned channel, which might as well.
I mean, NBC is doing it with The Office. They have full episodes of The Office. You can watch the Christmas episodes all on YouTube. Not like start to finish, but you can watch them in like a montage of just Christmas stuff, you know, if you just want to catch all the Christmas bits. You know, like, it's just, smart stuff, you know. So good wrestling's on YouTube. And on top of that, there's also great independent wrestling on YouTube. That's the other thing I want to stress enough. Like I mentioned before, Ashe Wrestling, ASC Wrestling, really good. Black-owned wrestling promotion. Definitely go check them out. CMLL, love what they've been doing. They've been on a heater as of late, so it's been really fun to check them out. And then on one of our shorts, the wrestling group commented on one of our shorts saying, Kyle Fletcher is the future. This was in response to the Kyle Fletcher video, the discussion that we had regarding that. And it made me think about the future and what we're going to be doing in the future. And fellas, you already know this. We talked about it before we hit record. We're doing our first ever award show. It's called The Meaties. And it will be next week. It's more of like a superlative than an award show, right? I guess.
Year-end awards.
Yeah. We're gonna do some end of year stuff. We're gonna have some fun with it. And there may or may not be a trophy. Probably may not. Hopefully shipping from Canada to California actually works out.
Positive. Think positive.
Surely
you're gonna be paying some tariffs on the meaty now.
Yeah,
you gotta
be paying tariffs on the meaty. but it's gonna be worth it. So we're gonna be doing that next week.
The meaty tariffs on the meaty.
The meaties. So it won't be like a normal episode. It will be us talking about the year in review, because it will be our last episode of 2025. As we'll be taking a little bit of a break for the holiday. And then we'll come back in 26 with a lot of cool stuff. And who knows, maybe we'll talk about what that stuff is next week. If we have some stuff planned.
If we even know, yeah.
If we even know. So a lot of cool stuff. And of course, feel free to leave those comments down. Favorite Christmas movie, wrestler of the week, who what's exciting you most right now, what storylines are catching your attention, which wrestlers are catching your attention. We'd love to hear from it. I surf through all of them trying to find good comments. So if you want to share your thoughts, whether it's on our Discord or on our YouTube shorts or in our YouTube videos, leave a comment, and you never know, you might end up being in one episode of Rebook. Fellas, ready to talk about some wrestling? What's been going on this week?
I figured we probably should. Yeah,
probably should. I mean, it's been how many? It's been 14 minutes. So let's go ahead and do this. One thing that we've been seeing, and we love it as narrative Nancy's over here at Rebooked, is a lot of emphasis on long-term storylines, long-term storytelling. Sometimes for better or for worse, right? Sometimes there's some good long-term storylines that work out very well. Like, you know, Cody Rhodes finished the story, Hangman Adam Page's arc, right? And then sometimes there's some storylines that, you know, are long-term that aren't quite so good. like the beginning of the Death Riders, for example, right? So we figured, in the interest of talking about all the storylines that are happening in, across WWE, TNA, and AEW right now, we talk about what are some of our favorites right now, but also talk about some of the ones that aren't really hitting the way that we would have wanted to see, you know? So I'll open the floor up and I'll start things up, and kind of what prompted this, because what prompted it was over on Friday, we had a lot of wrestling. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. A lot of wrestling on Friday. TNA Final Resolution, SmackDown, and Ring of Honor Final Battle. Now, you may think to yourself, oh, it's a Ring of Honor show. Yeah, maybe nothing too big happened. Turns out you were wrong, because Mercedes Moné lost her first title, number 13, the one that she won to get number 13, the Ring of Honor television title. She lost it to Red Velvet in a freaking banger of a match. And it kind of started a little bit of this. Maybe is this the downfall of Mercedes Moné? Is it too long? Is this happening at just right time? What do we think about the current situation? Number 13 being the thing that prompts it all. Thoughts?
I mean, I think we've been, I think maybe especially Jake and I have been pretty outspoken on our thoughts along the way. Not giant fans of just making props out of the belts, because I still feel that's how they are. That said, if hopefully it's not coincidence, because I like your point that it is, you know, unlucky number 13, and maybe she tries to, she wins another title or whatever and then loses it. But like, so I like that significance. I'm still just, I'm not. This better be the most epic crash out wild story ever. But if she just kind of slowly loses them all and then transitions into something else, I'm going to eat my hat.
So I feel like, Jake, that's what's happening. There was a promo on Collision. She talked to, forgot the interviewer's name, Alicia Atut, I think it was. And they were like, hey, you know, you lost this title, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, don't even talk to me. Don't even look at me. Don't even think about me. Don't even ask me a question. Why are we doing this interview? And then she like kind of just stormed off. I know you're not the biggest fan of it, of the storyline, but to Matt's point, do you want to see that? Like this just be like a complete and utter crumbling rather than like a slow trickle?
Yes, because the whole fucking storyline has been a slow trickle. I don't even think it's a slow trickle.
It's just
a thing that they did.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a story.
Agreed.
I think if it was intended to be a story, they didn't decide to do it until now.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't fucking care. I just don't. Like I wish that I did, but I don't. Yeah. You know why? Because in part, this feels like watching a billionaire lose $1,000 bet.
Yeah. Okay.
Why do I give a shit that a billionaire lost $1,000? I don't care.
Yeah.
They lost $1,000. You know what I want to see? I want to see them lose all of it. All of it. I don't give a shit about this little piecemeal, like, you know, they lost a couple things here and they let it. No, gone. I want it deleted. I want all of it to be gone seemingly overnight. Oh. I don't care about the slow trickle shit. We have trickled so slowly that nothing has trickled.
Yeah. It's been kind of the faucet is dry.
And that is the problem that I think AEW has, is like they are either so on point with their long-term storytelling, or it is a complete whiff. That's how it feels to me, that there is no in between. Yeah. And the, like you said, Death Riders to me until recently was a complete whiff. The stuff with Mercedes Moné, I just don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't care. And so for this to be interesting to me, I want it gone. She's got to lose everything.
I mean,
legendary, like Matt said, legendary crash out, absolute collapse.
Yeah.
Who is Mercedes Moné when she has nothing? Well, we've never gotten to fucking see that.
Yeah. The thing that I kind of like slash want to see both things, because I think we're going to get it, but I'm also excited to see it happen, is them continuing to talk about how she always fell short of the big one, right? She couldn't win the big one, you know? And I think that is notable. I think that is the crux.
There are hundreds of wrestlers who couldn't.
And you're not wrong, right? But this one's in a very, like, done in a very plain sense. She went twice. It was her best run ever. She has 13 titles and she won across 13 promotions. And yet, could not beat
two different champions.
Yeah, she could not beat two Tony different world Steph. Champions. It wasn't Tony. It wasn't Chris. No. It was that she couldn't meet the moment. And I think that if you want to take the story and start to really begin to push it, this is where it needs to go into, where Mercedes keeps choking.
Can you right now, without looking, name a quarter of the promotions that she has a title for?
I mean, I think I could, but I don't know.
But the fact that you're even hesitant, like, that's my point.
No, I mean, I think I could, but I don't know. I mean, do you want me to?
If she won these titles, like, yeah. I just.
No, I don't. But that's the thing, though. That I think is the thing, right? Yes, you are right. She won all of these titles, but she didn't win the one that mattered. See, the difference with Kenny was that when Kenny was the belt collector, he held the world title of AEW, the world title of TNA, like the world title of, there was one more, I forget which one it was. AAA, I think it was, or CMLL, one of those two. He held the world titles for those companies. Now, I don't disagree in all this, but they were making such a big emphasis on the 13 belts, Monet and Ultimo Monet and blah, blah, blah. But she couldn't win the big one. So I just feel like that is the compelling direction that the story needs to go in. Otherwise, yeah, you're right. Then it was all stupid. Then it was already dumb.
You need to land this plane. You need to start telling a story with it, because otherwise, it's just been props so far. You can have the argument. I've gone back and forth on it, on what the value is to these independent promotions. Everyone's like, oh, it's representation. They don't talk about them. That's my point. Northeastern, UK, England, whatever.
Right.
Champion. They don't. They see them. You see them. And if you can make out the name of the promotion during her entrance, you might take a look.
They don't list the titles that she had. Like, none of that shit.
Against the brings awareness to these brands. So but there are people who argue the other way, and that's fine.
She has drawn tickets for people at these promotions, which I think is kind of,
but she's Mercedes Monet.
She wouldn't have
that's kind of the
title.
Point though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I would care more about people coming and paying money to attend my show.
Yeah,
than...
but does she have to? But does she have to win the title?
No, she can draw money for these companies.
Because
she's Mercedes.
You're right.
Right.
So. But my point is, I also think you could have done this story with her winning, if you wanted to do a little bit of that, but you could even keep it in house with her winning two or three titles. But she can't win the world title. She can't win the TBS title, and maybe the women's tag titles, and maybe the Ring of Honor title or something like that. Yeah. But can't get the world title. Damn it. Can't get the world title. Damn it. And then she crashes out, loses her three title. Now I don't know what's going to happen with it. I'm already turned off on the fact that because I was intrigued with the Ring of Honor loss. I was like, okay, to your point, maybe. And then literally 24 hours later, she successfully defends the title on Collision, which I don't know if it was taped before or whatever, but it's okay, so we're just back to normal shit. I wanted to see the domino start to fall.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll get there, but it already just seems like a weird thing to immediately defend another title and then everything's fine.
Yeah, so on Collision, she did the promo that she talked. There was a...
And her and Layla
very
Gray,
clear,
right?
And then she fought Layla Gray because Layla Gray stepped up to her at Ring of Honor. Yeah. And kind of laughed at her while she was down, kicked her while she was down. And then Mercedes all right, I'm gonna make an example out of you. And
she's fine.
And then
was not affected at all by the title loss.
I think that my issue, what I would have liked And again, it depends on, like, you know, how you want to bridge this. But what I think would have been really fun to watch would have been, because on that card was the main event of Athena versus Persephone from CMLL. And they're really big on Persephone. She's been, like, getting a lot of, like, bookings and stuff like that. And she's great. I mean, she's a freaking absolute dominant wrestler for sure. She's going to continue to shine. But I wanted to see some fallout from Mercedes and Athena failing to get the tag titles. And I want a little bit more from that. And like when they teamed together and the Babes of Wrath beat them, and they kind of built off of it more for the Babes of Wrath than it was Athena and Mercedes. But I really would have liked to have seen them kind of gone somewhere and had Mercedes maybe cost Athena the title, since Athena didn't help Mercedes accomplish her goal of another title. I wanted something there. Maybe there is.
So much more with Athena. And
yeah, I wanted so much more with that. And we ended up getting nothing. So for that, you know, I'll give it a classic Simon Miller down. Like, I just felt like that was a missed opportunity. Should have done something there. I send it back. Yeah, for that one. That said, though, not to, like, harp on Mercedes, but, you know, again, like, long-term storylines, right? I can say, though, to this regard, one thing I will give AEW credit for, regardless of whether or not you think this is a story or not, they stuck with it for a long time. And I can't say the same for WWE when something goes south, because it kind of takes us to the John Cena Memorial Tournament Battle Royale for his heart and soul, which we have concluded a winner. But the reason why I wanted to kind of transition off of that was because, let's not forget, all this came off of the fact that we knew that Cena was going to face Gunther in the last match. They just needed a way to do it, and they found the way to do it. But also, this comes off of Cena, the heel turn that did not work out, a potential long-term storyline with The Rock that did not work out. Like, there's a lot of those things here, but we are now at the finish line. This is it. John Cena's final match will happen this weekend. And Matt, I've been seeing a lot of conversations online, people saying, all wrestlers say that. But you've worked with John Cena. You're a little familiar with him. And also, you're familiar with a lot of wrestlers. How prevailing is the thought of, like, hey, he's done, you know, like he's not coming back?
I buy it.
I buy it too.
I think couple of things. One, the funny thing, the old adage of, you know, oh, that they never say never. Unfortunately, you know where it's rooted in guys who retire. They don't have enough money. They come back for out of retirement to do this and all that. So, you know, it's a little bit of the Flairism, and there's a lot of people who have done it because it's a weird, wild business with a lot of up and downs and a lot of mismanagement of money. John does not have that issue whatsoever. And he has, it's like The Rock. He's in a similar position to The Rock, really, where he is a golden ticket in Hollywood. Like, he just showed up on Pluribus. I had no idea he was even in Pluribus. He's on the most recent episode.
Wait, who?
Pluribus,
Cena or Rock?
Cena.
Oh, shit.
It's like a cameo, but it's just like he is everywhere in all the A-list shit. Like, he is peachy keen. He has no need, and I think he's ready for the future. So there's no more spots. Yeah.
You know?
So there's no reason for him to come back whatsoever. In addition to, Cena usually is a guy who sticks to his word in general. So
No, I think I agree with you. Because I was telling Cynthia that, and I was like, yeah, you know, his last match is this weekend. Like, I'm probably gonna watch it because it's John Cena's last match, you know. And she's like, oh, they always come back. And I'm like, I think this dude's done. Like, it's done. He's done. There's no reason for him to come back. Well, why would he? He's an incredible legacy. Speaking of. And we discussed these long-term storylines. There's no longer of a long-term storyline than John Cena's character and the whole never give up, the whole, you know, fight till the bitter end, that whole thing. So I gotta say, as much as I want to criticize John Cena's like final year because of the fumble of his heel turn, them closing it out with him versus Gunther, and the story evidently being that Gunther, Jake, is going to make John Cena give up. I gotta say, I like that. It's a good one.
It's perfect. It's perfect. It's a perfect way to put a cap on his career. And the thing is I don't know. I don't know how this match is going to go.
I don't know either.
Because I'll tell you this, before this development of a story of him making him tap, I thought that Gunther was probably going to win. Yeah. And now I don't know.
I was in the same boat.
So I was watching, I think it was Simon Miller's ups and downs, but it may have been his other video he did, but he was talking about this. And he was saying, like, a lot of people were mad that, like, it wasn't Carmelo Hayes. It wasn't, like, you know, LA Knight, right? It was someone like Gunther who doesn't need the win over John Cena. But also a loss doesn't affect Gunther either.
Exactly.
And I think that kind of, I'm okay with it. I think that.
I would be too.
Because when I think back to Sting's retirement in AEW and how I felt at the end of that, like I was so happy and I was so like sad, but happy, sad and glad, and I enjoyed it. And it was such a wild match, and the Young Bucks were the best villains for that moment, and Darby and Sting and his sons and everything about it was just so like just nice, you know? And you're like, wow, that was a really fun way to close out one of the greatest careers of all time. And I think that when you want to close out what a lot of people in this generation coming from would consider to be the greatest of all time, a lot of people consider him that, that's a good way to close it out, man. It's a feel-good story. Let's play the devil's advocate, though. Right? Matt, what do you do if he doesn't win? Right? How do you play that out? How do you do it?
So the simplest, I think, of a barn burner of a match, like you know that they will. And I think the simplest would be, you know, powerbomb, 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 1, 2, 3. You're going to have to do more than the usual, of course. So I think maybe a couple of finishers. But given that Gunther, they've been stressing the choke and the, you know, and everything and tapping people out, this is where my head immediately went, because I'm like, all right, well, he's not going to tap. You're not going to have him tap out. There's no way. But you could have him pass out. He keeps fighting until his body won't let him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's time to go into the sunset. There's a pretty beautiful story in that too. But that is also where I'm like, that feels sad for John Cena too. Like, even though it fits and like he never gave up. He passed out. He gave up, like his body gave out before his spirit did.
Yeah.
But however you want to illustrate that. I do think given the opponent and given, I think there is one last corny, the arm goes up and he's up and it's attitude adjustment.
I just need five moves of doom for a win and I'm good,
like,
man.
Yeah, like, and like that's a feel good friggin' moment, especially if Gunther dominates a lot of it.
Yeah.
And then just wears him down to a nub. And then it's like, it's Toy Story 3, man. The lava is closing in. You're accepting your fate. He's holding hands with the C Nation.
Yeah.
And then the claw of hope comes down and he rises up from the chokehold and gets.
This is going to be a great match. It's going to be an excellent match.
I think they're good either way.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I tell you what I'd love to see, since Please. Matt basically kind of booked the match. I would love to see, this great match. Gunther keeps putting Cena in different holds, his sleeper, whatever, trying to get him trying to get him to break, to tap, to whatever. And finally, Gunther really like starts breaking him down. He's doing that thing he does where he, you know, Cena's writhing in pain on the canvas, and he's like, look, this is your hero, or whatever the hell he's doing. You know, walking around the ring, talking his shit. Cena gets up and he puts him in one last sleeper hold, falls, that wraps his legs around, falls down with him. He's got him like that. Right. And Cena raises his hand like he's going to tap, like he wants to tap. And then finally he raises his hand and we hear Cult of Personality hit.
Huh?
And CM Punk comes out and all he does is he walks down to the ring and just says, don't do it. Don't do it.
That's a tearjerker a little
don't
bit.
Don't do it. Don't tap. Don't tap.
Yeah. I'm okay if there's no music, but if CM Punk or just comes,
you know what I mean?
Out,
like just he just, comes out just yes. like someone like that, him. You know,
someone
AJ
comes
Styles,
out, Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. Someone, and they come and they're just like, don't do it. Don't
start
tap.
Pounding on the ring.
And then, yeah, and then, exactly.
Style or
yeah.
Something.
And that's exactly
it
right. And then what does he do? He flips over, starts to do the pin on Gunther. Gunther kicks out of it, gets up. AA, pin. We go home winners.
Yeah. Dude, I want Cena to win either. So bad. I really do want Cena to win. I really do. I want Cena to win, man. I just think that, like, I understand, you know, some wrestlers, you know, they want to go out, you know, their way. Bryan Danielson, right? Great example of that. He really, really did not want to go out being a champion. He wanted to lose. He wanted it to be part of something bigger. And, like, it worked out to an extent, you know, like for him, and he got what he wanted. But Cena, man, it's just like, it's like AJ Styles. It's like when AJ Styles is ready to retire, he could do whatever the hell he wants. You know, he could literally like have, he could do literally what Bryan Danielson did. Just go and wrestle all the greatest that he wants to wrestle and then just call it a day. I don't know. But Cena's like on that level. And the thing is, I've never really been a big fan of Cena as a wrestler, funny enough. But it's what Cena meant for a lot of people, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a little silly, but it's a little the symbol of Cena, you know, the cargo shorts, the big colorful shirts, the big colorful hat, right? Like, you know, the sweatbands, you know, all the stuff. Like, it's all like, it's what Hogan did, right? But kind of believe it. You believe it more so with him because you see the guy live it every single day too. So it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Respect the guy. So what a career he had. What are some of your favorite Cena memories? Because I didn't watch a lot of Cena's like big run, and I kind of want to go back and check out some of those moments. What were some, if there are any that stick out to you? I mean, I know for me, big one was Royal Rumble, Seth Rollins, Cena, Lesnar. Freaking love that match. Yeah. One of my favorites ever. Anything that sticks out for you guys?
I mean, for me, it's I'm going to cheat. And like, I was in a very fortunate position of working with John. Not super, super close. I'm not going to pretend I was his best friend or anything like that. But like, for a guy of his stature, he took more moments with me than I ever anticipated in a lifetime. And I, by moments, I mean like two or three over the course of a couple of years, but still, for a guy who got, when I was up in 2016, 2017, when I was up there on the main roster, who was the top of the top of the top and was already in movies and stuff too, but was still at the top of the top of the top with us. On a TV day, see me sitting down in the bowl and come over and be like, hey, what are you up to? What are you working on? What are you trying to get going? And I'd tell him, and he would give me kind of advice and be like, well, would think about this. Why haven't you told someone that? Kind of, he was very motivating. And from that to being on a house show with him, and in the back of the building, there was a piano, and I used to mess with piano. And of course, because John can't do enough between wrestling, movies, and learning Mandarin, he was also taking piano lessons at the time. And so like we played piano for like a few minutes together at the backstage at the house show. And he was way better than me because of course he's a wunderkind at everything. But yeah, like, so for me, those are the memories that'll stick out. Just that he was one of the ultimate example of like gigantic superstar who was still one of the guys and was always willing to like give back. And he did. He would sit and watch. If he was on a show with you, he'd be watching that monitor till the end of the night. And then before he'd go. So like, yeah, those are the things that stick out to me.
Wow. That's cool, man. That's awesome. It's a great perspective, you know, that very, very few people have, which I think adds a lot. Jake, follow that.
Okay. John Cena is my father. No. you know what? I'm going to take something that Cena has done that is, that brought me immense joy. And it is something that I need to revisit. And it is not something he did in the ring. It is wrestling adjacent in a way.
Okay.
But his performance as Lance Catamaran on Southpaw Regional Wrestling is one of my favorite things that John Cena has ever done.
Yeah, it was really good.
Southpaw Regional Wrestling was so funny. It was so good.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those, like, I mean, like, it really just felt like, first of all, it just felt like everybody was like, hey, we got a camera. Let's just do some weird shit in the back during shows. And Cena was like, hey, can I do that? And they're like, yeah, sure. You could, you're going to be the, and he just ran with it as Lance Catamaran. And it is, man, if you haven't watched it, go back and watch those. They are so good. That was 8 years ago.
And interestingly enough, what was Dango's character as his co-host?
Yes, who had the drinking problem because he was always in a divorce.
And his wife was leaving
him. Right, yeah.
So funny that these two are retiring within a month of each other.
That's crazy.
Dango's retiring January 17th at TNA Genesis. Get your tickets now. And Cena's retiring this weekend. And they did that. It's just funny. Yeah, like, think about it. They very different paths and everything like that, but like, they both
Chet
have wrestled
Cheddarfield.
About the same.
Chet Cheddarfield.
yeah, but they've been wrestling the same amount of time. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's wild, man. But you know, it beautiful to see a long career like that, you know, because like, John Cena's had some injuries. Same thing with Dango. They've had some injuries, like, you know, they've still been able to like take care of themselves, still look incredible, and can still, you know, give you fantastic matches. So,
and Tex Ferguson and Chad Too Bad.
Chad Too Bad, dude. That was, like, the Good Brothers, right?
That was the Good Brothers.
That's so
funny. A lot of that crew that made that were a bit, like, I think where a lot of that came from too was, Good Brothers aside, like, there was Breeze, there was Rusev, there was, a lot of those guys were guys in Florida, like FCW, when Rob McIntyre, Cena's trainer, when they started having those guys at the gym, the FCW guys at the gym to train with him, which a lot of people, you know, they would make these inside jokes.
And I have the whole roster right here of Southpaw Regional Wrestlers.
It was so good. So they just brought those inside jokes, kind of a lot of them, onto the screen.
Yeah. And they figured, hey, people are going to like them. You know, people are going to like them. It was funny. And it worked.
Yeah, let's see. Carl Anderson, Rusev was Big Bartholomew. Luke Gallows was Tex Ferguson. Luke Harper was La Barba Grande.
Wait, wasn't Luke Harper? No, wasn't it was Sex Ferguson?
No,
I think he changed it to that. That's what he called himself.
When he started doing his own stuff.
Yeah. Connor and Victor were the surf dudes with attitudes.
They're dudes with attitude. That's right.
Yeah. Tyler Breeze, Mr. McElroy. Lana was Christian Joy. TJP was John Johnson. What else do we have here? Seth Rollins was Dry Rub Doug.
Dry Rub Doug.
Heath Slater was Impressive Pelvis Wesley. Yeah.
Impressive.
Oh man, Rhino was Frantic Frank. Nick Nemeth was Nikki Lee Sticks.
Yeah, this is the whole Florida crew. Like this,
Xavier Woods and Big E were Vu and Do. Jason Jordan was Pork Chop Jones. Yep. The Miz was the astonishing Adam Dung.
Oh man!
Bryan Danielson was both Rene Barret and Dan Bandana.
I remember Dan Bandana.
And Michael Hayes was Dewey Jackson. Connor and Victor in season two played Danger Zone, I guess was another tag team. And then Natalia was Debbie Desperado.
I was always upset that Michael Hayes didn't just play Michael Hayes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know, right?
AJ Styles was Malibu Al. That's who I forget. He was a sponsor who had
he sold the car. The car ads.
He sold cars.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And the ads were unhinged. Yes. Like, they were crazy.
They were so good.
Dude, that dude is a clown, man. AJ Styles.
Adam Pearce played a janitor. Santino Marella was in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. Damn, dude. Everyone. Southpaw wrestling.
Yeah. Southpaw regional wrestling. That's a fun memory. That was great.
So I guess good memories. You know, John Cena like contributed a lot, both in the ring, out of the ring, funny stuff.
But
you
also
know,
that match on Raw, that random Raw with CM Punk. Holy shit!
Oh yeah.
Do you remember
the pile driver?
That was the best match. That's the best match.
Pile driver match, man. That I
on just a fucking random Raw,
dude.
And it was. I remember watching that live, and I was like, "This is a pay per view match." Holy
shit! The John Cena U.S. Open Challenge. Like,
dude, talk about Raw. The Raw after Mania 23, where him and Shawn had a rematch that went an hour.
Yep,
it wasn't an Iron Man. It was just the last half of Raw.
Yep.
Yeah.
They decided to do it. Shit, like, dude.
I mean, Cena had some moments, man. Cena, AJ Styles, multiple times. Those guys had. It just when you thought Cena couldn't keep up with a guy like AJ, when AJ was in his absolute prime, and you know, he was him and
beat up
AJ,
John Cena.
They were beat up John Cena. That's right. Man. Yeah. He had some. Yeah. And then of course, you know, his iconic rivalries, right. His matches with Randy Orton, that went on
Edge.
For Edge.
Triple
that's
H,
right.
The Rock twice in a lifetime,
twice in a lifetime. Never forget twice in a lifetime, you know? Yeah, man. Just some good memories across the board. John Cena, a legend. And looking forward to seeing what's next. Because regardless, that's Peacemaker. So he's going to still be on our TVs one way or another. Which
they're not making any more of.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not.
They will,
he,
I think.
He apparently
right
is supposed to play a significant part in the DCU.
Because of
what happened at the end of season two.
I think he's going to be in the... He's going to also be in the Waller thing, I think, or something
like
that.
I'm sure. I just remember I was just like, no plans for season three. And I was like, what?
Well, that's a whole other can of worms because, you know, the Netflix WB/, you know, Paramount garbage, that's kind of throwing a wrench. But good news is it shouldn't affect AEW because that stuff ain't going to happen for a while. Not until their contract negotiations. Yeah, it's all
going to
be tied
up. And even then, that's a separate part of WBD.
Exactly.
Too.
So that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. That's a long-term storyline we'll be keeping eyes on.
Yeah.
but speaking of AEW, though, they have a big, big show this weekend or this week. We have a lot of big shows. Obviously, Saturday night's main event happening. John Cena's last match. We didn't go through the rest of the card there, but it should be pretty solid. Obafemi versus Cody Rhodes.
I can't wait.
That match is it's going to be a good show. Genuinely, I think Saturday night's main event is going to be a really, really good show.
And as we found out, Cena's last match will open the show.
Open the show.
Yeah.
It is the first match, which is a very cool and classy move by John to have that open. And then the rest of the night is about these exhibitions between the future and the present and all that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah. So also, I think what could potentially be a match of the year contender is going to be on the card with AJ Styles, Dragon Lee versus Leon Slater and Javon Evans. It's just a tag match. There's nothing going into it, but good God, it's going to be incredible.
The talent alone in that one.
It's literally AJ Styles with his children. And they're gonna tear the house down. So it's gonna be brilliant. And then we got another Nikki Bella Stephanie Vaquer match. Am I crazy or is that not happening. I don't know.
You're crazy.
Am I crazy? I don't know. I thought there was like
we have Bayley versus Sol Ruka.
Oh, Bayley versus Sol Ruka. That'll be a good one.
That'll be a great match, too.
Yeah, yeah. Sol Ruka has been getting a lot of hype lately. Mm-hmm. Although, man, I'll tell you, her move,
but man,
that move might need to change one day. There's no way you keep doing that for another 5 years. It's just
cool. It is intense.
I can't imagine pulling like it's like Hangman with the buckshot. I'm like, I'm curious how you're gonna do that when you're older, buddy, because you know it's CM Punk. Let's not forget CM Punk. But maybe there's a difference though between him doing it all for so long and Punk never doing it. I don't know. So
muscle memory.
Good matches this weekend, but on the AEW side, we've just been getting nothing but nonstop good matches. The Continental Classic has been continuously. The C-Dos has continuously surprised us. Jon Moxley went 0-2 this week against not just Claudio, but he also lost against
Takeshita,
which I saw that one coming. But the Claudio one still, I mean, I saw that one coming too, but still it's crazy.
In a way, yeah.
It's crazy how we're feeling about things because Máscara Dorada picked up a surprise win against Claudio Castagnoli on Collision. So this pool is all over the place, fellas.
Yeah. I was thinking, I'm curious where some of the stories are going to go though because I was kind of convinced either Claudio or Pac we're going to go pretty close to perfect. And maybe they could after this, but they all lost this week.
Yeah.
Pac lost to Okada. Claudio lost. So I thought somebody in the Death Riders was going to go almost perfect and really show up Mox. I mean, again, they could continue to go flawless from here. And then Mox is already down two.
Yeah.
But so you could still play out that story of him not living up to it, you know, that which I think is what we're all still expecting.
Yeah. Mm.
I didn't know how to take talking about characters. I didn't know exactly how to take some of their antics this week outside of the ring because it was almost comical with like the training, like right after wrestling, jogging in the hallway.
I didn't hate it because it's kind of making me like the Death Riders.
It was a little bit of this dichotomy because I first went past the clip and I was like, wait, I didn't know this. What is this? And they're like doing an interview while jogging, sprinting down the hallway. I started laughing.
Yeah.
I'm like, we've ridden so far with the Death Riders. Cool. If they kind of turn into this, like they're all spinning out trying to be better and they're not. So they start just like doing calisthenics that popped me. But then
they're going to be Alpha Academy.
Sure. Exactly.
Come Alpha Academy.
But then they counter it with Mox is still cutting these like super serious promos about it, like in between. So like, which I guess keeps them kind of more gritty, but it's a weird mood shift and I don't know how to take it.
But the juxtaposition could also be that Moxley is still up his own ass with all this stuff. Like he keeps talking this and it's not representing who the Death Riders are now.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's the reason for that. Like for it to seem so out of place is to show the disconnect between their so-called leader and the rest of the group.
Yeah.
So I like it for that reason, but I just want one time, like for somebody to be like, this guy is just high on his own supply and he just keeps talking. Like I want someone in the Death Riders to say that. Yeah. And I think after Claudio beat him, when they were all kind of staring at him, I think that was kind of that moment a little bit.
But yeah.
Who is it from South Park that would smell his own farts?
Oh wait. Clyde, right? Was it Clyde? Or no, was it one of the side characters? You gotta look for it. No, now we need to know who on South Park.
San Francisco people. The citizens of San Francisco.
Oh, there was that episode, the Smug Alert episode. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
Because they were all buying electric cars and felt smug about it.
Poor Clyde. Threw him under the bus. Poor thing.
Yeah.
You know?
How could you do that?
I guess to the point you're saying about, you know, like Moxley, the him being kind of like this more, because you notice like he's doing a lot more commentary as of late. He's been more of like he's been more of like a positive, like, hey, I just want to see these people work. I just want to see them do this. I just want to see them do that. So I think I want to see them maybe take the story where like Moxley's lost his edge, you know, and maybe you could tie it to the fact that, you know, he's a father. He doesn't want to, you know, like continue down this path of like destructive combat or whatever of death jitsu, as he's called it. Maybe this could lead to kind of a character change up for Moxley potentially. I don't know what that would look like, but you know, it's very clear they have some direction here.
They did have those moments with Renee recently where she was like, I'm tired of him doing this shit.
Mm.
Didn't they have that on when she was on, not commentary, but she was doing some interviews or something.
Yeah.
And she like, it was obviously an in character thing, but she was just like, I'm tired of him taking all these chances and whatever. I'd love to see something, you know, like Renee get involved in some capacity to be like,
also John. Side note, do want to give a massive shout out to Renee Paquette because she does these, during the walkouts, they've been doing these kind of like setting the stage, sideline reporter type of things. They're so good. And I'm going to steal them for VCT. So I'm very excited for that because it was just good. It was good timing. It was good execution. It was very like punchy, very like good delivery of information, kind of gave you the context of like what's at stake narratively for both of the wrestlers in the match. Just give me more of that, man. I love that. Which I will say, a little bit of a criticism I have of Joe Tessitore and the Monday Night Raw, the Friday Night SmackDown crew. He's not a good job of keeping track of narrative bits. You know, commentary is important, which is why I say, you know, our dear friend over here, young Matthew Raywalt and his cohort, Tom Hannafin, two of the best commentators in the game because they get it, damn it. They get the storyline shit. You got to tie it all together.
Got to.
Commentary is a big part of that, you know, and it sells it, which I do want to give also a shout out to AEW. I do feel like their commentary has been really stepping up as of late. I've been very much enjoying it. Nigel McGuinness,
that was a big criticism that a lot of people, myself included, had of AEW for a while, was like, just tell me why these people are fighting.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they have finally heard that criticism and made an improvement.
Yeah.
And you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah. Like, tell me, it's okay to tell me how many rest holds, you know, Taz knows, right? That's fine. I'm okay with that. but, you know, I also want to know a little bit more, a little bit more meat on the bone, you know, and it's definitely happening that way. So, yeah, I mean, not much really to dive into with the Continental Classic outside of fantastic matches, everything you'd want to see. But we do have Winter is Coming. We have a pretty good card. Finals of the Women's Tag Team Tournament is set. It will be the Babes of Wrath versus the Timeless Love Bombs. We did not have that one happening. We were convinced it was going to be face heel in the finals. But instead, in a holiday death match, the Timeless Love Bombs ended up getting the win. Fun match. Jake? Call it. Who's winning? Sticking by it?
Of course I'm sticking by it.
Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa against him on the other side.
Don't care. It's Babes of Wrath all day.
Damn, that's all crazy.
Day.
Matt?
Yeah.
I send it back. No, I do not like this result. This feels pro wrestling, this feels WWE to me.
Okay.
Where like you have this interesting new team and people like them, but they're like, you know what? Just got to go with the star power. Tony and Mina, we're going to make them our first ever tag champs, even though it would be a great story for these kind of up and comers of the Babes of Wrath. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But when I saw Tony and them go over, especially you had a street fight, you had a million ways that Shafir and Megan Bain could have demolish them with help and all this stuff, interference. You could have had a million reasons to protect Tony and Mina in a loss there and then just set up a great babyface heel matchup for the titles and then crowned either one of them and had a kind of an up-and-coming group get the titles. again, I hope I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to have Babes of Wrath beat the really established Toni Storm and then and her partner Mina Shirakawa and everything like that. But this feels a little
Let's look.
We got to give the new titles to our star power. Yeah. So I hope I'm wrong.
I will say though, man, I'm excited for this match. This is going to be a great match. Holy crap! All four women.
It'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of
for
fun.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it'll be pretty dope.
Harley Cameron is going to pin Toni Storm.
That would be amazing.
If it happens,
I would love that.
All right, we'll revisit this next week. We'll revisit this. But we do have some big matches on the card. Swerve is doing some double duty. Him and Hangman are going to be teaming up to take on the ops as Shibata and Hobbs, or as I like to call them, Shibs or Habata. Habata. That's going to be happening. And then Josh Alexander will be facing off against Swerve on Collision. You have Chris Statlander and Jamie Hayter teaming up against the Sisters of Sin, but that could potentially set up a conflict between
number one contender.
Yeah, that's right. Hayter and Chris Stat. And then Daniel Garcia goes up against Mark Briscoe for the TNT title. This time the roles reversed because last time they fought, Daniel Garcia was TNT champion. So, and then we should have some Continental Classic matches sprinkled in there. So it's going to be an exciting week there. And then, you know, as far as like long-term storylines goes, kind of visiting some more WWE stuff because the Vision, we have no movement on who the masked man is, but we have seen him two times now.
Twice now.
I think there's a second shooter on the grassy knoll.
I don't think
it's just one person.
It didn't look like it was the same person though.
No, and I don't
know.
Yeah,
but I think it would be interesting if it's
revealed
WWE's
as multiple people
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Yeah, it comes back to the idea of like, are these different people filling a costume until they decide
right
who will be revealed, or is it going to be revealed as, oh shoot, there's like three different people helping Paul Heyman and it's some NXT guys or something.
We're rebooting the Nexus.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Honestly,
we're rebooting Nexus. Now that Cena's out of the picture, we're rebooting Cena.
What makes it? I mean, yeah, they finally could do it. You know, Nexus's greatest foe has finally been vanquished by time.
Exactly.
So now the Nexus can return. That's it. Mm-hmm. I will say though, I'm struggling with the Vision story for a lot of reasons, but one of them is because of the connection that I'm not really seeing right now between what's going on with Bron Breakker and these promos where he is just going off and they're fun. What did he do? He was like, spear, 1, 2, 3, spear, 1, 2, 3, spear, 1, 2. You're like, okay, buddy, you just got to win the match once. That's it. You know, that's it. But how is this fitting? I'm very,
what do you mean?
Like where are we seeing this connection? Is it like, where would we like to see the masked man and the Vision? What is the thing, right? What would you to see the thing be?
Go ahead, Matthew.
No, I don't even. I classic Michael Scott. I started a sentence I didn't know the end of. I don't know. They're helping. I feel like it's just gonna be classic bad guy. There's somebody will be revealed. They're a new member of the Vision.
Mm.
Or like I said, maybe it's a Seth connection and they're waiting to see his
status
prognosis and stuff like that. Maybe they got some news that like, oh shoot, this is only going to be like 6 weeks, not 4 months.
Yeah.
Right.
So like maybe they're prepping something for like January.
Do you
want to
see
like
it
that.
Be maybe multiple people though? Do you want the Vision to become like some kind of massive
and seven
group?
Person?
Yeah,
no,
like,
I don't.
Like literally
I
a
don't
Nexus.
Like, I don't like giant factions. I think the Don Callis family is too big. I've always like.
We're starting to see that
like,
fall apart a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like 7, 8, 9 person groups like. Four to five people, I think, is always good.
I just think it's so interesting. I like the idea of, you know, Punk has not been shy in his heelish past about using groups to his benefit.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of an interesting, like, it almost feels a little like the Shield in a way. Like maybe the you know, the Vision is recruiting some people just to keep that power, to screw over CM Punk. Like, you know, like when CM Punk had the Shield as his lackeys for a long time. Now the guy who, you know, was being used by CM Punk starts another group, and now they're, you know, going to make Punk's life a living hell.
Yeah.
I could see it being something like that. That would be interesting. Just a little, like, you know, some kind of universal karma in a way for Punk and how he behaved in the past.
Yeah.
So I could see it being something like that too. That could be fun.
Yeah. I'd be down with the idea of a Seth who kind of comes back and says all these things, all this happened, like, all your success is only because of me, because if I wasn't there in those critical moments, you would have, you know, you would have lost. Right. And that's like a very like straightforward way to go about doing it. But I would like for him, I don't know. I would like for him to do it, but I would like for him to have another group. I want another group. I want, like, him to do, like, you another Vision. Seth, I want, I want more groups. I think what we need in wrestling is more groups. And Seth needs a group. Roman needs to remake the Bloodline 2.0. Electric Boogaloo. MFTs, I think.
Yeah, the Perception.
Yeah, the Perception. Calling. The Perception can be the
counter to the Vision.
Vision, the Perception. I'd love it. I think it would be fantastic. Whoa, you have another one?
The View.
The View.
No, that's it.
No, there's the Vision, and then the group that opposes them is the Mask.
The Mask.
Covers the
Dude,
Vision.
Oh, that'd be so good. Honestly, though, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Bro, how funny would it be, though, if Seth Rollins came back with a group called the Mask and they all were wearing masks? Oh, that'd be great. I'd actually be totally down with that.
But, well, they are helping the... Anyway.
So, yeah. I guess in that, in keeping in the theme, what... If you had to pick a long-term storyline right now across the three promotions that you're digging, that's like, it's really hitting the notes, it's doing everything you like, and you want to see more of it.
That's
currently ongoing, but it's been going on for a while, and you've just been enjoying it for what it is. I'll say for me, the one has been the Young Bucks storyline. I've really enjoyed. From them being the founding fathers, the EVPs, the new elite into the founding fathers. Now, like, this, you know, like, hey, we don't really want to mess with Don Callis, but we kind of don't have a choice. And them turning their back on him and realigning with Kenny. I really like that story. I thought that was really good. And there's still more there. I thought it was really well executed. What about you guys?
I was going to say that. The two that are sticking out to me would be, I continue to praise Swerve and Hangman.
Yeah.
That relationship continues to be at the forefront. Like, they're not forgetting it. And, like, even they're about to team up, they've made a point of it. And, like, hey, we're going to do this. And then we still got, this doesn't mean we're a tag team or we're best buddies, but so their history has been at the forefront of all of it. I like that, to keep evolving that, and, you know, everything that happened in All In. So, like, that continuing to churn and grow and evolve is cool. Over on our side of the fence on TNA, I think there's something that I truly don't know and I don't believe is intentional long-term story, but Frankie Kazarian's, obviously his overarching goal of always wanting the world title, never quite getting it. But since his heel turn, he's been a hell of a scumbag. But in this last year, he's normal heelish stuff, but then he won Call Your Shot last year. Cause I like to think, anyway, in my head canon and some of it in the show canon, of like, he cheats. He's a scumbag. He doesn't care if, you know, he's almost an 80s heel in his presentation. Oh, yeah. Right. But he's still Frankie Kazarian, and it's TNA. So he takes pride in his wrestling ability. So even though he knows he's going to cheat, I'm one of the best. Yeah. I'm an OG. I'm a day one. You know what I mean? And so like last year he won Collier's shot and then, but he tried to do it even though he was a dick about it. I'm calling it. He said the date. He got added to the match at Rebellion with Ethan Page and Joe Hendry. Like he tried to almost do it straight up, even though he was still a dick and it backfired on him. So then he won it again this year, controversially with Nick Nemeth. And then he said, screw it. I'm not being straight up at all about this. I'm straight up money in the banking. Yep. This Santana got jumped by 8 people. I'm doing it.
Yep.
So like, there's a little bit of like, hey, yeah, I'm a heel turn. And then like, yeah, I'm a scummy. But like, he finally just gave up on like, I don't care about anybody thinking about
just
my
wants
wrestling
the gold.
Ability or whatever. I just want the title any cost. So
yeah,
I like that it elevated to that level.
I agree. That's Frankie Kazarian was definitely one of the individuals I was thinking about when I was thinking like long-term stuff, because you know, it's, we had been calling for Frankie to be TNA champ for a hot minute now.
Sure.
We had said it multiple times, especially when we were doing the TNA episodes. So, you know, that definitely was really cool to see it play off that way. Jake, what about you?
I mean, you guys kind of said the things that I was thinking about, in particular, the Hangman and Swerve. I'm going to pick something a little like below the radar, maybe. In Dominic Mysterio.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that he's going to have to rectify some of the things that he did while Liv was gone.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how Liv reacts to all that, because you know right now it seems all lovey-dovey, but again, as I pointed out like last week or the week before or whenever it was, She's sure slapping him a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and like, hey, you know, what you do in the privacy of your bedroom
is your business.
Is your business.
That's true.
Sure.
Once you do it on national TV, we got to ask questions.
This seems there's some undertones to it, if I feel.
Yeah.
Some subtext to these slaps.
There's definitely more.
Be interesting to see.
With Liv.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more with Liv. I'm interested to see if Dominic continues to be this heel, because he's still the AAA champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot left to do with Dom, and they seem to just kind of like throw him into whatever, and he seems to thrive at it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. He's incredible, dude.
So I'm just kind of interested to see his path and where this all goes. Does he become this? I mean, because he has kind of become, he is this kind of lovable heel in a way, in the way that Eddie was. But is he going to turn into this face that still like does shitty stuff and heelish things? But you're like, nah, that's just Dom. You know what I mean? So I'm really interested to see his development. And I love his commitment and dedication to the fact that Ray is not his father.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great, man. And you talk about long-term. I mean, they've been,
it doesn't get any more long-term than
that's long-term, baby. That's long-term.
2005, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing's going to go on
20 years.
And Dom's ain't going anywhere. Not for a long time.
No.
So we got plenty left meat on that bone for sure. I think that's a good one. Dom is fantastic. There have been some fun ones. And also there have been some ones that have kind of missed the mark, right? You know, like you think about early Death Riders and that like leading into I would probably say like the Adam Copeland matches, like from the or like the origin to the Adam Copeland was kind of like ugh, and then they found
the very start was pretty good.
Yeah.
And it quickly kind of just got boring and repetitive.
Well, it's like they had a, you know, it's like reading a research paper, they had a great thesis and then their argument went nowhere.
that's kind of how
it's like, oh yeah, okay, this is really cool. I like this, like you have a mission statement, what you want to do, and then it just fell apart.
And this one, I want to get your reactions on it, because this one's isn't bad because who was involved or the situation, which is bad because we didn't get anything from it. And that was the New Day and their Biggie turn. That literally just, it was so good. And it just,
for as huge as it was or should have been, it feels like little did follow nothing. Up.
And, like, what a wet fart. Like, that could have been.
Which it was hard because obviously he can't wrestle. So how much can you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like, and so I get it that it was just a catalyst to turn them in a shocking moment. But even with him not wrestling, I felt like there could have been someone evolve. I mean, whether he kind of backed some babyface tag team, you know, kind of was in the corner of somebody else who wrestled them, and, you know, he cost them matches in a very simple way. I agree. There was a missed opportunity to do it, leave it just a little bit.
Yeah, because
more
the thing
there.
was it wasn't even like I liked what they did, and if it was a vehicle to just turn them those two heel and to kind of get them moving in a different direction, then sure. But they always left the window open of like the possibility, I think, narratively, of E coming back. They always like dropped these subtle hints and promos, and it just felt like, again, you had two guys who, when they have opportunities, absolutely knock it out of the park. The church, the whole funeral for the tag titles, like that was a brilliant segment, super funny, really well done. But yeah, it just, from there, you just didn't really have anything else, which was a little bit of a heartbreaker. And you know what? I'm going to give TNA a little flack here because it was one that I didn't really feel like we got much payoff on, and that was the whole Joe Hendry, you failed us arc. We didn't really get much out of that one. The Eric Young Joe Hendry conflict, that nothing came from that.
I think contract, obviously, because that was right when he was like, I'm sure maybe somebody signed on a dotted line 1 week finally, and he was officially gone.
And again, not a critique of the performers, and heck, even of the writers. It was more just the situation and how it played out.
It sucked because it was weird. It almost kind of came out of nowhere, and then it disappeared just as quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I think, though, of the modern era, probably the best storylines would, and if I had to say the best, probably have to be Cody finishing the story. And then the Hangman, right? And like those were really good. I think Mike Santana's, but you know, the jury's still out. We gotta see how that one plays out.
I agree. Like if we would have just had a nice moment out of BFG, I think that I would argue that
Mike Santana's still the champion right now. We'd be like, oh yeah, it was a great moment.
Yeah,
you know?
And if we would have been able to follow up Bound for Glory with episodes right away and done some stuff, and because this year, starting with his feud with Ali, which was so personal and broiled,
so
and then
good.
He overcame that, and then moving into the title scene and getting, you know, screwed at Slammiversary, which we all hated, but then the build to BFG would have worked out, and the ultimate crowning, if we could have capitalized on it better, I would say that is one of the better ones.
Yeah, but
agreed in recent memory, but
jury's out. Let's see what happens.
And there's a big 2026 to happen.
I'll tell you another one we never really got to settle, and it was due to injury.
Which one's that?
It was Kevin Owens.
Oh, yeah. That one was a heartbreaker.
That one was a real bummer because, like, there were a lot of things coming together with that, with him and Randy and Randy
Cody
and Cody and Cody and Kevin.
Promos
and
in the car,
Kevin,
remember?
Oh, yeah, where he just would film shit in his car. And, that was a blast. That stuff was great. And I miss Kevin Owens. I hope he's doing well. Yeah. I hate that he didn't get to, because, you know, if he's healthy, he absolutely should be having a match with John Cena.
Yep.
In his
1,000%.
Yep. Because that was one of my favorite United States Open challenges.
Yeah. I was still in NXT at the time, so I just remember being like, that was so cool.
It was Pac, awesome. When he fought Pac or Neville. Back in the day.
Yeah.
When he hit the red arrow, and I was like,
and you're like, oh my God, he's going to win. Yeah.
I was so hyped, especially because I was such an NXT nerd. I love that black and gold era NXT. Whew, man. Too good. Look, lots of good stuff. Lots of great long-term storylines. We want to hear from you. Let us know. What do you think? Favorite ones, least favorite ones, ones you wish you got a little bit more context of. Some you thought could have been something, but ended up not really being anything. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll read a couple of them in next week's episode. But of course, that takes us to the final segment of the show, and it is the Rebook 24/7 Champion of the Week. This is, of course, the award we give to the thing that made us happy and brought joy to us. Doesn't matter what it is this week, no matter how it may be. I'll go first. It's quick. I'm playing Kingdom Hearts right now. I worked through Kingdom Hearts 1, just beat that. Beat Chain of Memories. And now I'm playing Part 2, which I never got to finish as a kid. And I freaking love the games. Holy crap. I forgot how amazing these games were. And the combat was super fun. The story is confusing, but when you actually take a second to sit down and listen to some of the things and read some of the Ansem reports, I'm like, oh, I get it now. So it's pretty good. It's a good game. So Kingdom Hearts. And there's like a whole collection that they've released on PlayStation for like $35 or something like that. Totally worth it. Totally, totally worth it. If you ever had a passing interest in wanting to try out the Kingdom Hearts games. All right, fellas, who wants to go next?
I'll go. I just shared something in the chat, and mine is to the end of an era. One of my favorite pieces of AEW content out there was RJ City's Hey EW. Always had hilarious clips and funny moments with people. I think RJ is incredibly smart and entertaining. If you haven't watched the show, shame on you.
Go back
and watch some episodes. Find whoever with some of your favorite wrestlers. And
the one with Beast Morthos is amazing. It's too good.
He made everybody, like, because he put himself as the foil and the slip on a banana. He was the guy to kind of, and so he made everybody look entertaining and funny. And most people are more entertaining and funny than you might even realize. And if nothing else, just watch this last episode. He does a bunch of very funny, like, beyond the mat riffs. And, you know, there's stuff with Renee and Tony Khan and everything. But truly, I think one of my favorite segments and everything they've done on all their channels. And I'm sad it's ending. I mean, hopefully it just means he's doing more and is busier with behind the scenes stuff and producing talent.
Well,
or
I mean,
he's largely
attributed to the success of Timeless Tony Storm, the vignettes that they did and all that stuff. I mean, what a great hire for AEW.
I think he's such a entertaining and, like I said, just clever, whip smart personality. And we've never met. We follow each other, but we will meet one day, I promise.
Yeah, definitely, dude. I'd like to meet one day too. He's a pretty smart guy. Jake, what about you, man? What do you have?
Well, I also sent you something for mine. But let me tell you, last night, on Monday Night Football, we had the greatest.
I'm ready for some football.
I was ready for some football because
good.
ESPN2 broadcast a special version of the Eagles Chargers game in which it was completely computer animated, and it was the monsters playing from Monsters Inc. This right here is Mike Wachowski running for a 56-yard touchdown on a 4th-and-1. Look at this play. Oh, they're going for a tush push. No, they're going to toss it to Mike.
Look at Sully.
He's going to go up to Daddy Fox's room.
Look at Sully with the coverage.
He's at the 20. He's not getting caught by Sully. Touchdown, Mike. But here's the deal. Is my 24/7 champion of the week is James P. Sullivan, also known as Sully. I want you to listen to this monster stat line from last night. He had 2 field goals, both the game tying and end up game winning field goal. He scored 2 touchdowns, a sack, and had 4 interceptions on the night. Sully can do anything. He had the final interception in overtime that sealed the deal for the Chargers to win. It was
amazing.
Awesome.
So
so fun.
They literally like the copy.
It is the live
same
game.
Plays.
It is the live.
So it's
game.
The same game.
Yep, it's the same game that's playing. They were about 1 minute and 30 seconds of game time behind. I guess so that they could assign, like, you know, hey, this guy gets an interception. Well, so we'll have Sully play that position or whatever. But it was, they've done it now with SpongeBob. They've done it with The Simpsons, where Bart played against Homer. And then it was SpongeBob versus Patrick, I'm pretty sure, on that one.
That's amazing.
But nobody had a performance like Sully. That dude did everything on the field, helped his team win in overtime. James P. Sullivan, you are my 24/7 champion.
I do want to give a quick, just like to Jalen Hurts. Uh-huh. Just want to put it out there for Jalen Hurts, poor guy. He definitely is Jalen Hurtson, because he is the first player? Might not be. I don't know who
he does. He's the first player since 1978 to have
throw an interception and
on
then
the same play.
And then a fumble.
And then fumble on the same play. Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing. If you I watched that amazing. When it happened. I watched it when it happened on the Monstars cast. On the Monsters cast. And dude, it freaked. The system was like, what the fuck just happened? Because Sully picks it off. Jalen Hurts runs over and recovers the fumble when Sully fumbles it, but then someone hits Jalen and then he fumbles it and the Chargers get it back. It was crazy.
A triple turnover.
It was crazy. Yeah.
Wild stuff.
It was the messiest game. The whole game was like watching 3 hours of Kevin spill chili on The Office. Like it was just, it was a messy game. But it went to overtime. It was awesome. And funny enough, that interception from Sully sealed me going to the playoffs in my big money fantasy league.
Congratulations.
So I was running. I was like, Sully! I was going crazy.
Make that money. Let's go, Sully. Hell yeah. Love to see it.
It was awesome.
That's awesome. All right. You know, I do feel like we kind of have to give it to AEW, though. Closing. End of an era.
AEW,
RJ City. End of an era. You are our rebooked 24/7 champion of the week. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us here. We thank you all so much for watching. And as always, make sure you check out our Discord. You can find a link in the description below. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing. You can do so here on YouTube, or you can also check us out if you're listening across all the podcast platforms all around the world. Or if you just want to keep it simple, why don't you just go to rebookpod.com. There you can get all our links and you can check us out across all the different social media garbage. In any case, that is going to be it. That's going to do it for us. See you guys next week for the Meaties and our last show of 2025. We'll see you guys then.